great news, reviews, commentary, not just another podcast.
Are the Ordinary People Podcast.
Code 4722. Illegal use of city electricity.
How do you please? I knew you'd say that.
I eat punks like these for breakfast.
Here comes your host, the world. Transmission interrupted.
Welcome to the Big Blob Broadcast with all the geeky news that you can use. My name is Mark Swint. I am a voice actor, and you can currently hear me in the Machinima Project Soliloquy, which can be found on machinima.com and also youtube.com/machinima. And with me is special guest co-host...
Brett Weaver. Hi. Many people know me from old shows like Evangelion. There are newer shows like One Piece, and I'm very happy to be here.
Also, as a special treat, we have a girl gamer whose name is...
Jack.
Yeah, just Jack.
Just Jack.
Yeah, she's like Sting or Bono. So, tonight on the Big Ball Broadcast, we have enough news to fit in a very large barrel and then roll down Niagara Falls, which starts with Arkham Asylum gets Guinness World Record, Sony's losing money on the new PS3, Microsoft's response to that failure rate survey that we went ad nauseum about. Anyway, in the spirit of the Big Ball Broadcast, now is the part where we whore. So, Brett, please do.
Well, I would like to say that I'm in a production that I really want to push right now, but you know, other than One Piece that I occasionally do, haven't been doing very much lately except private stuff that nobody's terribly interested in. Really, the thing that I would push more than anything is my wife, EK Weaver. Some people know her as EK or Big Big Truck. We are in the process of creating a comic book, a graphic novel that's not really anime version. It's just a really good indie comic book that she's working on, and I'm basically helping with the character development and humor. And it is called The Less Than Epic Adventures of TJ and Amal, and we're hopefully going to have it out sometime about this time next year. And that's it. Oh, and my band. And I'm in a band, too. The Thuai Rush band that only plays here in Austin because we've only been together 6 months, and we had our first gig last Friday, and it was awesome.
Awesome sauce. Speaking of bands, this is the part where Otherworld Steve would say, Perimeter of the Void album Dust, available now for free at eberecords.com/Perimeter of the Void. If you are wondering where it is that Otherworld Steve is, because suddenly the Big Ball Broadcast has neither Kyle or Steve. Steve got called away for an emergency. Hopefully he'll actually be able to show up sometime mid-show, so that way we can maintain the status quo of the show. And beyond that, yeah, I think that we've managed to cover all the normal whoring bits, especially the part where it's like, oh yeah, Brett, what do you do? Hey Brett, how did you get into voice acting? No, I'm kidding.
I lost a bet. No, really, that was Amanda Wynn saying, I'll do the quick version. Amanda and I were doing children's theater, and she had me come over to her house, and she's like, I did this cartoon. You need to watch it. I'm like, sure. And it was called Burn Up. Not Burn Up W or any of those. It's the original Burn Up. And we watched it, and she goes, what do you think? And I'm like, that sucked. And she's like, you suck. And I was like, no, it just... And she said, well, you think you can do better? And I said, hell yeah. And so she goes, okay, I'm going to get you an audition. Go. So I went 14 years ago and auditioned for Gunsmith Cats. That's right. I got Gunsmith Cats, and I worked ever since until about last year.
Yeah, where now no one's working. Isn't that great?
Yeah. Yeah, boy, I could get into that. I'm sure everybody's talked about that already.
Actually, no, just because we don't tend to talk about misfortune on the show, because the Big Ball Boy Scout likes to talk about things like movies, tech, anime, crap like that.
Well, it's a great industry to be involved with, and there's, you know, it's not really a negative thing. It's just the state of the industry, the way it is. There's work, but you got to be in the town where the work is. And since I live in Austin and the work was mostly in Houston and Dallas, well, I mean, therefore, they call me when they remember me. So that's the way it works.
All right. Well, since you're the noob to the Big Ball Broadcast, even though you kind of sound like Kyle when you do your super sexy deep voice.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have you open up with the first story of the night, which you can pick one of the two that I gave you.
So Sony is losing money on the PS3 Slim. I didn't even know there was a PS3 Slim. See how that works out? So anyway, the hardware business is not a profitable business. Don't believe us, just ask Sony. When the original PS3 launched, Sony bled money on each PS3 sold, but the manufacturing process improved and Sony was able to close the gap. So just as that started to happen, the company is now launching a new hardware iteration. New hardware means new cost. When the Times asked Sony exec Kaz Farai, really? That's his name? Is that a real name or they just made that up? If Sony was losing money on the PS3 Slim, the exec said this. If you're just talking about the hardware alone, the quick answer is yes. That makes good headlines, but I don't actually know that the true nature of the business that we're all in, whether it's PlayStation, Xbox, or Wii. I think the better indicator is to look at the business as a whole platform to ask, are you... Oh, great. So he's just going to change the question. Nice. Are you profitable in terms of the hardware, software, and peripherals? And the answer to that question is hell yes on a gross profit level since the last fiscal year. And then he said, I really don't want to talk to you guys anymore. I'm hanging up the phone. And he did that.
Last time on the Big Bald Broadcast,
I got ridiculously unleashed on the whole Sony price drop thing because I have this image in my head of two warring factions. Well, three warring factions, except one's full of white-clad retards. And the other two are clad in blue and green, where the green ones are completely apathetic. They're just like, look, we're kind of an offshoot of the PC faction. Nobody really cares. We're going to be here forever so long as a computer exists. And then there's Sony, who's just, you know, barbarians. And they're sort of like, there will be no price drop by the honor of Sony. When the PS3 first got priced, or actually before it got priced, before the official press release, they released a figure that said it cost them roughly $1,100 to build a PS3 in its entirety, and that they had never taken more than a $250 hit on a system. So, yeah. And the PS3 was originally looking at it, was going to be somewhere priced between $750 to $800. To which
I remember that.
Yeah. And they said, okay, well, we'll take the hit. We'll take the big hit to try and remain, what's that word, competitive in the industry. And so it came out at $500. But this isn't news because it's like, oh, great, we're back where we started, where it's cheaper to make a PS3 now, but we're still hemorrhaging money over it. And they said that they were going to lose $1.5 billion in the first year. I guess they expected a $500 game system to fly off shelves as though it were the mid-90s and people were buying Sega Saturns. And
exactly.
But it didn't happen. So over a course of 3 years, they hemorrhaged $3.5 billion. My constant stance is, they don't have to worry about it because they're Sony. And how many things do you own that has Sony on it? You know, your MP3 player, pieces of hardware that are in your machine. You can buy laptops from them, TVs.
Sure, car stereos, the speakers that go with the car stereos. There's plenty of other places they can pull money from.
Exactly. So I look at things like this and I say, well, they don't really have to worry about it. I mean, why do they even bother saying like, oh, well, we're going to get over this. We're going to really, you know, mount this and make it our bitch, because they don't have to come out and say things like that as if they're going anywhere. But I guess they need to sate a fan base, which they otherwise just kind of stab in the back constantly, where it starts with, oh, the PS3 is going to have backwards compatibility. No, it's not. PlayStation Network is going to be the greatest thing since Xbox Live, and it's going to be better than Xbox Live. No, it's not. Right. So Sony just... They like to turn their back on their fans, and yet they come up with press releases like this where they're trying to humanize an entire company, where, you know, they're a huge multinational corporation, and yet they're trying to make it out as though like, no, we're small and frail, and please root for us, buy a PS3 Slim. If you buy enough, we'll eventually be in the black.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Weren't they the ones that sent out the root kits? That whole root kit issue. They were the ones who did that. That came with the CDs, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe that's why they're trying to like fear of be sorry for us because we might be losing money. It's like, well, how about not screwing up machines and opening them up for security breaches and put out a product that you have to worry whether it's going to work correctly or not.
That was during a time when they were so pro DRM that they were actually willing to what was essentially hack people's machines, throwing in a rootkit that was giving access to certain other embedded programs to GIMP any unlicensed software that you had on your machine, which I fell victim to.
Oh, you did?
I did, because I had a copy of PaintShop Pro 5 that had been moved from machine to machine to machine. So whenever you install software, the registry gets a hold of it and it says, like, okay, this is supposed to be here. But since PaintShop Pro 5 doesn't actually need to do that, that rootkit actually completely decimated my copy, to which I had to find the rootkit in the registry and destroy it. So yeah, this is the crap that Sony pulls all the time, and I'm not falling for it, because I am a gamer. I'm not a fan of the Xbox. I'm not a fan of the PS3. I'm a fan of where the good games live, and that doesn't necessarily give me a brand loyalty. So I don't really need my big multinational corporations that decide to bend me over on the price of a system to try and humanize themselves to me, so that way I feel better about the fact that my account balance now says zero.
A lot of people are becoming wiser to Sony, though. Like, okay, they had a price drop, but you want someone else to play, so you have to spend $55 on a controller, $25, give or take, on HD cords, or $40 on an HDMI cord. So mm-hmm. it's still going back up to $700, $800 for the system. People are seeing this now. That doesn't stop them necessarily, but they're also seeing, like, 360 failing, the game mm-hmm. library, you know. People learn or they don't.
So do you think, which is the system that everybody seems to be the happiest with?
More people seem to be happy with 360s, regardless of the nigh on 50% failure rate.
Yeah.
Because people will still rebuy them when they fail.
And so people who know nothing about gaming systems then get a Wii, right?
Well, that's something I really do tend to be very cyclical. Actually, between me, Steve, and now this conversation, it all gets very cyclical, where I believe that Nintendo, the reason why it is that it's so constantly stated that Nintendo is not a direct competitor to Sony or Microsoft is just because they know who to pander to, and they know mm-hmm. that accessories sell. So they hand you a trackpad, a super scope, a light gun, a vitality bar, freaking Wii Fit Pad, you know, just whatever they can, and they know that stuff sells. I mean, I've been constantly happy with my 360. I just this week bought a new one just to replace my old one, which was a launch model, so it just had to go to greener pastures, which happens to be my friend's basement. But people are genuinely happy with the 360 experience just because, yes, you pay for Xbox Live, but you pay $8.95 a month, or $19.99 every 3 months, or $50 a year. So I don't even notice. Like, I never even see Xbox Live show up in my bank statements anymore because it's such an insignificant purchase. You know, that's the equivalent of a pack of cigarettes and a bottle of balls. What do I care?
Balls. Got to remember I'm 12. So anyway.
You and everyone else we get on this show. But yeah, I've never been disappointed with the Xbox experience. And when I buy a PS3, I'm sure that I won't be disappointed with the PS3 experience or the PSN, which honestly, I don't like the idea of Second Life, so I'll probably never log into the PSN to actually go to PlayStation Home. But I just think back to a few shows ago, we were talking about PlayStation Home and the fact that it's a part of digital life, about how your second life is supposed to be better than your first life. And yet in PlayStation Home, you have to wait in line to do things in the environment. So if a bunch of people are playing pool in a pool hall and there are no open tables, if there are physically no open tables, you have to wait in line, like in a queue, which is funny. But segueing from this, we can actually talk about how the PlayStation 3's brand new model, the Slim, its Blu-ray drive is actually inferior to the original. While most of the PlayStation 3 Slim haters in the house have been knocking Sony's new system for the lack of PlayStation 2 backwards compatibility, these haterade drinkers, I love that, will be pleased to know that the Slim has an inferior Blu-ray drive. Engadget did an extensive analysis of the system and discovered that the Slim's Blu-ray drive is a tad slower than the original's. People at Engadget were quoted as saying, "We're actually a bit surprised by the results here, so we checked over these a few times, and it seems that the PlayStation 3 Slim's Blu-ray player was actually a tiny bit slower than our 60GB PS3 Classic from 06, albeit not by much. The time between inserting the disc, listening for that last little click sound, and having it register to the menu was pretty much the same 10 seconds each time, but once you click on the disc and you actually launch into the movie, the time it takes to get to a non-loading screen was seconds quicker on the Classic. Not a drastic difference, but after so many years to improve the BD technology, you'd think they'd bother to add something with a little bit more pep." Yeah, we're Sony. Please buy our PS3. We're losing money on it. Yeah, but you're also cutting corners. Why should I care?
The funny thing is that they tested it with a 60 gig, which is, what, 2007? whereas the 80 gig is the model that's still kind of out right now. Why wouldn't they test it with that one? That's the one that most people are going to have. I mean, other than the people that wanted the backwards compatibility.
One of the things that I always go on about is that the reason why it is that a PlayStation always cost so much was because, since it was all proprietary hardware, all of that stuff was like brand spanking new on the market. Every last part of it. I think that the only thing that you could actually find on a store shelf was, you know, a USB port. Beyond that, it was technology from the far and distant future. So, I don't know. It's not strange to me. I mean, they've been trying to cut corners, and there have been market speculation that one writer had actually wrote that Sony should release a version of the PlayStation 3 that only plays Blu-ray movies, which kind of defeats the point of the title. Like, change it from PlayStation 3 to just Play Movie 1, I guess. I don't know. I guess that they've been trying to figure out ways to just kind of work around and cut costs and make things work in a way that's market friendly, that won't get their fans to turn on them, even though it's been proven over a number of years that their fans won't turn on them no matter what, especially when, at least for a while, they had some really hardcore developers making them exclusive content, which of course is no more, because Squeenix decided that if they're going to survive in the market, they should develop for more than one system.
There was also a publisher that said, like, hey, Sony, bring up your numbers or we're not making stuff for you anymore.
Well, it just seems strange to me that they're still making a big deal about Blu-ray when, you know, we've shown that we've got streaming capabilities. I mean, they could do a cheaper model that says, all right, we don't even have all the movies that you can get, you download. You know, do a thing where they use the network and not use, don't even have a CD player in it. And just say, okay, this is how we're going to cut cost. We're getting rid of this. And now everything is streaming and you hold it here and you have your account and do it that way. I mean, don't have it as its own. I mean, almost do it as its own deal.
Well, the PS3 and the 360 are both kind of like that because they can both stream Netflix. But the PS3, all of the actual games are on Blu-ray discs.
Right. So why not? But that doesn't mean it has to be on the Blu-ray disc.
Right. Like, you mean like take out CD and DVD capability?
Yeah, and then get it to where it'll download. Like, I mean, I'm only thinking from just a total, you know, just thinking outside the box or whatever. Ugh, I can't believe I said that. But to where you subscribe to the game, and maybe it downloads an ISO, and then you just run the ISO and mount it that way and run it that way.
We were talking about that last week. Problem is, because this is where we go on our digital distro kick.
Listen to last week's show.
Well, they can't listen to last week's show. It's not posted yet. I'm lazy.
Way to go.
Too many F-bombs to delete.
Really, really is. I'm trying to be good this week, specifically noting something that Common has said about the fact that I was scary last week. So, trying.
Usually scary.
The digital distro thing is something that Sony's embracing, but only on a small scale, and rightfully so, because they're releasing the PSP Go, which decreases overhead, because that means that they don't have to print games to physical media anymore. It means that they don't have to come up with inserts and boxes and all of this other garbage. And that's cutting, you know, that's, I think it's something like 17 cents a box, and a CD at bulk costs 10 cents, and they own the copyright on that anyway, so whatever. But when you're talking about something like Blu-ray, which is this is actually something that I wish that I had thought of last week, where you're talking about the contents of a Blu-ray disc, and that's a beautiful, beautiful thing, because it is just, you can jam it full of so much content. But imagine how long it would take to download, and on top of that, you can't guarantee download rates. That's true. The problem.
True.
You know, because sure, I mean, to have an ISO that you mount to the drive and, you know, you list it in a list of games, yeah, that's great. But how long is it going to take to download that? I mean, think about how long it takes to download a movie on Torrent, or how long it takes to stream, you know, 90 minutes, 120 minutes on.
Well, Mark, Netflix. I'd just like to say that I have never downloaded a movie on Torrent, because that is illegal and blah, 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 blah. So
yeah, and I'm sure that EK has a full Photoshop license that was bought.
Your eye patch seems to be showing there.
I what? What? Who? What? I'm sorry. Did we lose connection? I what? Oh, whoa, whoa.
Yeah, why don't we call Adobe and have them check out EK's computer? How about
hey,
that?
Hey, it is an official Adobe product, okay? It, by the way, it's Adobe, not Adobe.
Yeah, because they're so adorable.
Yeah.
All of their little widgets. But accusations aside, yeah, it would take way too long to download all of a Blu-ray disc, and they're probably still going to have certain problems with the PSP Go.
That's why I can't wait to see what the Microsoft's numbers are going to be like with the how they're streaming, downloading full games now with the new update. Mm-hmm. If they put, say, Lost Odyssey on there, and it was four discs, which would probably amount to like one Blu-ray disc, maybe one and a half. If they put that on there, and how many people would download that, and how long would it take?
Well, would you need to do the whole game? I mean,
yeah, because it's a full game. Like, you can do all of Mass Effect, which was a massive game, but still only one 360 disc.
Sure, but you could maybe have it. You know, I'm sure there's a technology that they can figure out, but it would be like download the first quarter of the game and then get started, and as you're playing the game, the rest of it is downloading. You know, you don't have to have it to where the whole thing downloads and then it starts. It can be, you know, portion it out.
What had actually come to mind to me after I was listening to last week's show, as I was starting to edit it before I got extremely lazy, was there's a service on the horizon called OnLive, which we only have talked about in passing on this show, where essentially what happens is that OnLive sells you a sling box. And if you people in the audience don't know what a sling box is, or Brett, if you don't know what a sling box is, a sling box essentially streams content from a primary server, much like we run this show, except what that server would be doing in the OnLive case is the server would be doing all of the bulk work. It would be, you know, doing all of the renders. And what the sling box allows you to do is you connect a controller to it, and that sling box slings all of the controller commands to the server, which is doing, again, all the hard work for you. So in that sense, that's kind of how it is that a games on demand model could work and work moderately well. But that would mean that Sony would probably have to readjust how it is that they how they think about digital distro, although it would allow for them to kind of put a clamp down on the modding of systems and piracy right up until the point where someone figures out, oh, so I can mod the sling box and just get it to download to an external hard drive. Brilliant.
I'm looking at OnLive right now just to go, oh, okay, I see how that works.
Like, ooh, new hardware.
It's like, hmm.
The only problem is that OnLive, even though they've kind of been pimped at E3 and Gamescom and a couple of other trade shows, the one thing they haven't brought out is the business model for their price point. Like, they haven't actually said how much the service is going to cost month to month, and that's where I'm really, really interested to find out, because, I mean, not only are the requirements slightly hefty in order to use OnLive effectively, but, I mean, they can pretty much charge a premium as high as they want because they have no competition. So if they have no competition, of course they don't have to keep prices competitive, because they just have to keep it just below what it costs to buy a system and a game, and possibly roll in the cost of Xbox Live. But then again, Xbox Live is the only case of its kind, except for Games by Arcade, but that doesn't really count, where Live is the only service that people are paying for in terms of online gaming. Steam is free. Games by Arcade is free. PSN is free. Wii Wi-Fi, even though it sucks, is free. So I just really fear, like, I think it's a great idea, but I genuinely fear, like, how much are they going to rape people for that service?
Yeah, I don't know. No. Hey, well, but it wouldn't work. It once again, I'm just thinking that they couldn't do it like a Netflix, where it's a monthly, or even like a cell phone, to where, yeah, you got to shell out the $200 or whatever it is for the box, and then the monthly, and say you got to sign up for a year or 2 years and do it that way.
See, the thing is, like, it sounds like a golden opportunity. It really sounds, you know, as though it's a business model that could be embraced, and that's not too dissimilar from what it is that we deal day to day, except these companies aren't regulated. Cell phone companies aren't really regulated in terms of their pricing. There have been probes by the FCC, which there's a probe that's going on right now, which is a story that I really wish I'd pulled, because that would have been a really great segue. Mm. But they're going to be probing cell phone companies for things like, why is it that, you know, the kick-out fee for a contract is so high? Why is it that data plans cost so much? You know, things like that. Because the only reason why those prices are high or low in the first place is because they're trying to remain competitive in the face of, you know, every other company in the market. So T-Mobile stays somewhat lowly priced because Verizon and AT&T aren't.
Right.
And back and forth all the time. So, but if OnLive has no competitor at all in the market, where essentially the only primary competitor that they have is the market itself, where they're sitting there going, like, well, we don't have a system. We just have a box, you know, like the Riddler's box in the most horrible of Batman movies, Batman Forever, where that's actually a pretty good comparison, where, you know, like, he cornered the market on something that didn't exist. So he could charge however much he wanted for it, and there was no regulation for it, so he could get away with things like finding out Batman's identity.
So they could either get away with this or look at it comparatively and go, well, the average person buys one or two games a month at $60, so...
Well, true. But the worry that you have, and I mean, and this is my whole diatribe against corporate America, but you would hope that there would be somebody that would clue in and go, you know what? Instead of trying to take every last cent, that even though we're supposed to be making money, we need to be realistic and have something that will keep people around. It's not that we can suck the money out of and get it for 6 months, but or a year. But let's like, hey, let's see how far we can go long term. And then from that, we can use that to do development and keep more, have more people come in. And then, you know, that's just me being pie in the sky.
It just reminds me of the Sega Genesis channel, if anybody else remembers that.
I do.
And that failed, and it makes me sad.
Yeah.
Because it was amazing.
Yeah, the Sega channel was short-lived in the good old Sega CD days.
Mm-hmm.
I think that we can break momentarily for this. Coming up on the Big Ball Broadcast, Arkham Asylum gets Guinness World Record, Microsoft's response to that failure rate survey performed by Game Informer, and more with our wonderful guest co-host, Brett Weaver, who loves to have an opinion in lieu of not working. So all of this and more on the Big Ball Broadcast.
Demo Don'ts, Lesson 1.
Hello, I'm here for my demo, which is over 9,000 seconds long!
Yeah, we've already got him, but what can you do? Do you know the answer? The good news is, Kyle Hebert does and is now offering private voice acting and demo consultations. You can work one-on-one with Kyle and he'll offer his tenured critique to help you fine-tune your most important instrument, you. Send an email to voconsult@thebigballbroadcast.com for more info. Not a promise, but a path. Because the only person who listened to this guy was you, just now.
She's calm.
There are a couple of other things I just tell you and I remember.
He's crazy.
If you could not see the similarities in the personalities within like the first couple of episodes, you need brain surgery. I mean, seriously.
Can two people get together and record a podcast without driving each other crazy?
Slap.
Ow, you don't have to hit me so hard.
It wasn't that hard.
Find out on Anime Jam Sessions with your hosts, DJ Ranma S and Kudo Usagi. Log on to djranmas.net/animejam or look up Anime Jam Sessions on iTunes.
Weebertainment Weekly, the greatest podcast you'll ever find, starring Tombstone and Zach Jenkins.
Sure, there are better ones out there, but not starring them.
This is Tombstone from Weebertainment Weekly, and this is the opportunity for me to shamelessly promote my program.
You mean our program, right?
Yes, Zach Jenkins, I mean our program. You are technically the host.
Since you've taken over being the spokesman for our program, why don't you tell them what we have?
On Weebertainment Weekly, you'll hear the best in entertainment and media news, as well as my favorite section, Talk Nerdy to Me, where I make fun of guys like Zach Jenkins, who wish their girlfriends look like anime characters.
Your mom. Join us every Tuesday night from 7 to 8 on WeberFM.org, or you can join us on our podcast at WeberTainmentWeekly.blogspot.com or on iTunes under WeberTainment Weekly.
I must be Brett Weaver, and you're listening to the Big Bald Broadcast. Listen to it, love it, know it. Oh, yeah.
That's right. That was Brett Weaver, wasn't it, Brett Weaver?
Weebertainment Weekly?
Weebertainment Weekly.
Oh, look, Weber. I was like, what? I don't remember making that.
Call my lawyer. Right now. I want my lawyer right now, damn it.
Right now.
So you are listening to the Big Ball Broadcast featuring Mark Swint and special guest co-host Brett Weaver, voice actor, legend. God, man.
Don't forget Jack.
Yes, that's right. And girl gamer, awesomeness. Person who hits me when we go to commercial. And just now, Jack.
Smoker of clove cigarettes.
Hi, everybody.
For those still wondering, Kyle is away at a con in Ohio somewhere, not too far from here, just about 5 hours or 6 hours, something like that. But unfortunately, obviously, he can't make it. So moving on, we're going to talk about Batman Arkham Asylum earns Guinness World Record. Well, it's official. Eidos's Batman Arkham Asylum is the greatest superhero game of all time, at least according to the Guinness Book of World Records. The Dark Knight's latest virtual adventure has been recognized as the most critically acclaimed superhero game ever, as it received a worldwide average rating of 91.67. Metacritic rated it at 91. Assuming that a flood of particularly nasty reviews don't come pouring in sometime soon, it's safe to say that this record rating is secure for the time being. Also in the article, it actually mentions that the Guinness Book itself is completely irrelevant. It's lost all relevancy, and it's only because they seem to make up stuff to have world records for. Like, world record for longest time spent picking your belly button. World record. Yeah, a few weeks ago.
I get that.
Nice. Not a few weeks ago, but a couple months ago, there was some guys from Pennsylvania, not too far from here in Philly, who had the world record for most text messages sent in a month, and they garnered a $28,000 bill from T-Mobile because, you know, unlimited text messaging is not actually unlimited. And, of course, it was hilarious when they got beat by a 15-year-old girl in California a week later. But I've spent the last 3 days playing Arkham, and I beat it, and I also unlocked a few Riddler challenges with a lot of help from Jack, because she just is half my brain. But the game is phenomenal, and it deserves a record, and I personally think it deserves a record in a book that's far more relevant. And, you know, just put it up for a lot of awards. Like, screw internal awards. I don't care. You know, give me G4ia and the Crap Spike Video Game Awards, and I hope that it sweeps every one of those categories. Best voice acting, best gameplay, best soundtrack. It was just so phenomenal, because normally in games I'll just sit around and there will be dialogue for atmosphere, just crap going on in the background, and you really don't care because you walk into a game, in any game just about, where you can hurt people. And you're like, what can I shoot, stab, maim, dismember? But in this case, they're all the henchmen are wired. They are all carrying headsets and radios and things, and you can hear Joker talking to them, and it's honestly really riveting. And I got to a point when I was playing the game and I said, you know what? Screw Kevin Conroy. I don't care. Mark Hamill. Sweet. So what about you? Do you have any aspirations to play this game? This world record winning game?
Well, as soon as I got to get a console before I can do it. But
prices.
Yeah, I know. I saw that this weekend. There's some really good prices on the 360. So
I had a really good experience with that game, and I wasn't sure if I was, just because there have been so many crap comic book video game titles. Although I'm seemingly have a pretty good track record right now, because I went out not too long ago, bought Wanted Weapons of Fate, which is only 5 hours long, but it was a good freaking 5 hours. And now I bought Arkham, which was phenomenal. And if I were more into collecting stuff, if I were more into like solving riddles while Jack punches me in the back of the head, then I would totally have kept it. But instead I sold it to Jack. So so now she gets to suffer through some of those parts. There were a lot of good moments to be had in Arkham, just because whoever it is that wrote that game, one, played Metal Gear Solid 2. Just, you got to play it, just, and you'll know what I mean. But it's worth it. To the audience,
I mean,
I'd say it's
Mark Hamill. It's Mark Hamill's awesome when it comes to voice acting.
I think what Arkham did was they took what The Dark Knight did. They took that dark, gritty, visceral amazingness and channeled into game form. Like, yeah, 10, 15 hours, like 20 probably if you want to find everything. But it was just so deep. And I was listening to an interview, and the publisher was saying, like, okay, we're trying to make this game for people that don't like Batman and just average people. But if you like Batman, you're really going to like it. And when I was watching Mark play it, was like, wow, they have a lot of things that are like really just for people that really like Batman, but it's a stealth game, which is something that really hasn't been done before, and just the free flow combat worked out really well. I don't know, just go out and buy it.
Does he have a lot of interesting moves, or is it like basically three moves that you just do that over and over again?
Oh no, the game gives you a lot of really interesting upgrades, five of which are useless.
Yes.
Where
sonar bangs.
Yeah, they give you the sonar batarang, which all it does is it makes a noise and makes henchmen run to it, which is totally freaking useless.
Oh, goody, high-pitched HD.
They give you a remote batarang, the ability to throw three batarangs at once, and my favorite move, the inverted takedown, which allows you to grapple up. Yeah, the classic Batman kill, where you grapple up to a gargoyle, hang upside down, and when someone comes up, you immediately like Spider-Man down, grab them, pull them back up, hold them by their neck, and then
hang them upside down
magically, because they never really show an animation for it, wrap the cord around their legs and hang them upside down, and at first they start yelling because they're upside down, but then the blood rushes to their head and they pass out.
But then all the other henchmen are like, oh my god, start freaking out.
Yeah, that game is so psychological and so fun, and the only thing that really mars it throughout the entire game is a one line of dialogue in which Jack loves, where
don't you, say it.
You go through. I'm gonna say it.
Please don't.
Because everyone has to.
No.
Look
it up on YouTube, kids.
You go through this one scrimmage.
Which he's done twice.
To save a freaking janitor, which at that point is just like, you know what?
There was no point.
I understand helping the weak and the downtrodden, you know, the innocent, the helpless, the powerless in a world of criminals that operates above the law. What's that from? Come on, you called me a baby, so you better know what this is.
Wait, say it again. I'm sorry.
Oh, wild card, got it.
A-Team?
No. Knight Rider.
Oh, okay.
A young loner championing the cause of the innocent, the helpless, the powerless, and the world of criminals who operate.
Oh, that's right.
That's right. What was I talking about? Oh, the line of dialogue. You save the janitor, and he's like, are you okay? It's like, I eat punks like this for breakfast.
No. Why'd you have to say it? It's like Candlejack.
Oh, that's bad. That's the best. You know, that's the first thing I said in a booth when I went to record my first show. Was I went in the booth and I was like, okay, I'm getting, and I'd done radio before, and I was like, okay, wow, I sound really good on the mic. I'm Batman. And Matt was like, what? I go, I'm Batman. He's like, okay, let's go. I'm Batman. He's like, one more? Yes, one more. I'm Batman. And then he's like, okay, let's get going.
Have you ever seen the comic Batman, My Parents Are Dead?
Yes. You killed my parents.
There were just all these like Batman-isms that I was saying while playing the game, because you just can't help it. It's such a good game that immerses you so well in the confine of it that you just do it. So I just started messing guys up, and I got one guy in an inverted takedown, and there's this one ground takedown where you grab a dude who's like dizzy and you grab him by the collar of his shirt, and then you just punch his face and the back of his head slams against the pavement. And immediately I was like, now he's dead, just like my parents. And that is the sign of a good game, where you're just so into it that you can like sit there and make jokes that aren't making fun of the game, but making fun of like the mythos behind the character.
Oh, exactly. So I guess what you're saying is Arkham Asylum is better than Ghostbusters. Is that what you're saying?
Different things, but yes.
It is. It genuinely is. Because, I mean, Ghostbusters is fun just because, you know, like Harold Ramis and Dan Aykroyd wrote it. And it's got all of that great Ghostbusters snark and humor. And the gameplay was exactly what you expected it to be from the time you first saw it, when they didn't have the license to do it in the first place. It plays like Gears of War with a proton pack.
Oh, nice. But
it has the same issue as Wanted. It was like, I finished it in 5.5 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
But Arkham, I mean, you get about 12, 15 hours out of it if you get lost or die a lot or just like to look for the riddles before you leave a room. Check.
Shut up.
But it just feels so good, and you know, it's such a genuinely good time. Like, I haven't had such a good time playing a game in so long, and I wish that more developers would concentrate on making games fun as opposed to just making them pretty.
No, I really have to give it to Activision and Rocksteady, because they made this amazing game and made it with still a teen rating. So it's like, you're not... no sex. There's still enough violence where it's entertaining, but it's not blood and gore and just constant intestines and skull fragments.
Right.
It's just fun.
I had sold my 360 to my friend Dave, who I've mentioned on the show before, like once, so he'll go squee when he actually hears this episode. But I sold it to him, and after I kind of gave him the doom and gloom of owning a 360, because it's just kind of like, look, it's like owning a puppy. You got to take care of it or it's going to run away and turn red.
Yes, do not keep your puppy in enclosed places or shake it while it's eating a disc.
Yes, because you lose it. But he was like, wow, it's because I told him, like, you're in a new world now, because before that he just owned a PlayStation 2. And I told him, like, look, it's not a matter of whether or not the games look good. Concentrate on whether or not they play good. I've gotten into extensive arguments with people on, like, the G4 forums when the PlayStation 3 Slim didn't have backwards compatibility. And people kept saying, well, why do you people care about a PS2 backwards compatibility? Like, live in the now, forget the past. I'm like, because it's got a library of 5,000 titles.
Yeah.
Which were great. And no, comparatively, they didn't look good. But who cares? You know, they played amazingly. Ratchet and Clank was amazing. Jack was amazing. And so was Kingdom Hearts to certain people that don't know what real action RPGs play like. And, you know, it was a great time in gaming when they knew what the hardware could do. They figured out every single trick that they could. They didn't have to concentrate on trying to do this hat trick where if we make the game really pretty, they're not going to care how it plays.
Right.
But now, you know, no one concentrates on that because the Unreal 3 engine is just supposed to be, you know, the engine sent by God and everybody uses it, except for all this time that having a pre-built engine saves you, they're not concentrating on making the game play well. I'm pretty certain that Arkham runs on the Unreal 3 engine just by how bulky the characters look, and it plays amazingly, and it's a really good time. And I wonder, whatever happened to games had to be fun, you know, before they had to look good? Because I can still go back and play Genesis games, NES games, Super NES games. I still have a Sega Saturn and a Dreamcast. And games on those are great. They look like shit, but they're amazing to me. So
it's really funny that you should say that, because I have a friend, you know, and here in Austin, we've got a few game studios here. And one of my friends, Blake, who's just out of college, got a degree in game design, and that was one of the things that we talk about all the time, is he says, yeah, pretty is fine, but in the end, I want something that's fun. That you could, he said, the way they're doing it now is they work it out on pen and paper, and they have people play it just as pen and paper. And if they said, this is the test, is that if you can have fun just playing it on pen and paper, then it gets to the next level where we start programming for it. So it looks like maybe, at least here in Austin, something might be happening to where it's going to start being fun games instead of just pretty games.
I personally hope it does. I was reading an interview that Hideki Kamiya was making Resident Evil 4, and he just has all these ideas, and then Devil May Cry was born of that. And that was just so new, and then we got God of War. And now everyone is like, oh, I want Resident Evil 4 again. Which Resident Evil 4 was nothing like the other three Resident Evils. What was the point? But it did something amazing. And then Devil May Cry. It's the whole hack and slash, look, it's kind of pretty, oh, boobs. And then God of War, now everybody and their mother wants a new God of War. They're not getting it till next year. I don't want to hear. But everyone just has this conception. I want another Devil May Cry. I want another Gears of War. They just want Call of Duty. They don't want something new. They don't want Mirror's Edge. It made me so upset that Mirror's Edge did not sell well because it was a brilliant idea. First person, you're just running.
Yeah.
You're scaling buildings. It's like Prince of Persia, craziness, cyber, futuristic, just amazing.
Horrible dialogue.
Horrible dialogue. All right, soundtrack. But it sold horribly.
The problem that continues to happen is one person will make something really creative and interesting. And then immediately the people who are the money people come in and go, oh, well, that worked. I mean, you see that with movies, TV. You see it with music. All of it is always the money people get a hold of it and go, okay, we don't want something new, another new thing. Let's just do another version of this so that we can just make more money instead of make something that's, you know, interesting or a lot of the people who buy this stuff, they also many times say, well, I want this but with a little bit more. Don't give me something new, that takes too much thought.
Right. Most people fear the new. And then there's the problem with Treyarch and Infinity Ward. Now Call of Duty 4 was modern warfare, like you're in Iraq, this is something that's current, it's happening right now. And then World at War came out, so completely different team, and it was World War II. And people, and now this November, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2 is coming out, and it's like, oh my god, it's modern again, give me it. And it's coming out with night vision goggles, which is something completely ridiculous. No, it is. I'm not even lying. $150 comes with freaking night vision goggles. But they don't want World War II anymore. It was 60 years ago. Almost 70.
So do you think futuristic would be the next way to go with that?
I don't think they will, just because Call of Duty isn't futuristic, but people love the whole Gears thing. Let's take a chainsaw, attach it to a gun, have blood, guts, gore, and horde mode. Let's just kill things. And children love it. They don't make anything new anymore. It's all Call of Duty, it's all Gears of War, it's all first-person shooters. A lot of people didn't even like Resident Evil 5, and that makes me sad.
Well, and then what was the big game from, I mean, according to my friend Blake, because, you know, he's the one that goes, oh, dude, you need to check this out. Right. What was the thing that everybody just went ooh and aah over? Braid. That was done by one dude, and it was very interesting. I was like, well, this is kind of like Mario Brothers, but, like, really interesting.
Right, but that wasn't even, like, a full release. It wasn't on disc. It was just Xbox Live. And it sold some insane amount of downloads. I downloaded it. I had a great time with it. Also, amazing soundtrack. But it was something that the arcade, Xbox Live Arcade, is giving some developers, like small developers, the chance to do something new and amazing, like Everyday Shooter or Braid. People are seeing this and going, wow, this is cool. Like, let's have something like this. And then there are the people who say, I want to play Saints Row. Give me some hoes. Like, that's what the world is. Intelligent people who like Braid, and then people who like Grand Theft Auto and think it's the best thing in the world. Grand Theft Auto 4 was fun, whatever. I'll run over someone. I speak Russian. There's Russian radio. You know, it was fun. It was kind of innovative. It was different, but it's still Grand Theft, and people base it just on the name. It's nothing new. Like, yeah, there's a Russian guy. I'm pretty sure there was a Russian guy before. Nobody cares. It's Grand Theft Auto.
In track pants.
In track pants, yes. You could change them. He got Dickies later.
Yeah, but it was kind of funny when I was playing that game for the first 5 minutes and I said, all right, so he's Russian, so how long is it going to take for him to get a fun, like find a pair of track pants? And within 20 minutes...
Like, oh, he's wearing them already.
Yeah.
Just pan down. Like,
damn, you find a Russian... like clothing store, Russian-owned clothes store, and it's got a rack full
of just track pants.
Track pants in every color.
And leather jackets.
I don't understand what the Russian track stereotype is. Yeah, like the track pants stereotype, because whenever you see a Russian in most modern movies, he's always wearing like track pants and a track jacket and like a chain or
gold
something.
Chain, giant gold chain.
Yeah.
I think that's like a New York thing, you know, like a Russian living in New York.
Well, that's where Grand Theft Auto 4 was set, so...
See? There you go.
Yes, I need my track pants. I need them now.
So, is Warner Brothers' Green Lantern movie in danger because of budget concerns? Thought it was yellow that was supposed to be his magic wishing ring's weakness, not green or gold. Production Weekly twittered yesterday that Green Lantern's proposed Australian shoot is understood to be under threat after the rising Australian dollar has blown out production costs. If true, this could mean a second move for the movie's release date, initially hoped for December 2010. Martin Campbell's adaptation of the long-running DC comic starring Ryan Reynolds? Really? As test pilot-turned-space cop Hal Jordan had already been pushed to summer 2011 before this news. A Green Lantern movie in trouble already. That's interesting. I didn't know. I thought Ryan Reynolds was going to be... he was...
Deadpool.
So yeah.
No, he still is.
No, he's not.
So he's going to do...
Okay, no.
So he's going to do DC and a Marvel? That's interesting.
We were talking about this a few weeks ago when this first came down because there was a... rumors as to who it is that was going to play Hal Jordan, and Reynolds is in the running, and immediately I said, well, that means that he can't do Deadpool because that's a conflict of interest for the same reasons that Will Arnett couldn't be the voice of Kit in the Knight Rider relaunch because he was the voice for GMC trucks. he had to bow out because the new Knight 2000 was a Ford, and it was just one big Ford commercial anyway, so that would have been pretty bad. So now Reynolds is going to play Hal Jordan, Green Lantern, probably not going to be taking up the role of, here you go, Kyle, the Merc with a mouth.
Yes.
Freaking hate hearing that. And
that's too bad, too, because I'd rather him as Deadpool than as the Green Lantern.
as would I. He was a really great Deadpool, but
yeah.
Money's money. And DC's kind of got a really good track record right now, other than Catwoman.
Ouch.
Yeah. And the thing is that Green Lantern is a niche character, you know, because in the DC universe, there are three top-tier characters, Batman, Superman, and Wonder Woman. And then everyone else is just kind of, you know, there, especially when movies are concerned. Like, let's do a Flash live-action TV series. Who watched that?
Yeah.
But I have it on DVD. a lot of people, you know, Wonder Woman's ingrained in their brain. Green Lantern, nobody really knew about the Green Lantern or what it was or who it was. Like, most people think that the Green Lantern is just a guy, not an army, not the interstellar police. And I think that maybe by doing this film, they're trying to either set up the cards for a Justice League film, which they still have a problem with that just because they don't have established actors for all the roles of the Justice League, plus there's no guarantee.
Before 2011? What they have to do for 2011.
And yes, with the advents of the Siegel and Schuster estate pulling, like, just constantly doing this grab fight for rights to Superman, their Justice League film is looking pretty bleak right now because they have to do a film before 2011, elsewise they lose all the movie options. Honestly, I hear this news and it's just like, I don't really think anybody's going to care because there's a fake Green Lantern trailer done by the same dude who did the fake Thundercats trailer. Looks really good, and he decided that Nate Fillion should be Hal Jordan, which I thought that was a pretty good choice. But
that is a pretty good choice.
But nobody really knows or cares about the Green Lantern in the same way that nobody really knows or cares about the Flash. No one really knows or cares about. I mean, I could rattle off a ton of DC heroes. Nobody knows who the hell they are. The Booster Gold, Blue Beetle, Green Arrow. Oh. You know, like. See?
They're doing a Green Arrow.
They are. And again, it's just nobody cares whether or not there's a Green Arrow movie. No one knows who the Green Arrow is. No one knows that he's the anti-Bruce Wayne.
But the only people who see superhero movies, there are two groups of people. Children who go, oh my god, Batman. And then nostalgia people. Which, yeah, I guess all the nostalgic people would be like, oh my god, Green Lantern. Oh my god, Green Arrow. Like, no.
Or unless it's people that have also watched Justice League Unlimited.
But that's what brought the Green Lantern to the forefront in the first place, where then you say, Hal Jordan, Guy Gardner, like, wait, isn't the Green Lantern black and voiced by Phil Lamar? No.
Well, he was in Mortal Kombat versus DC. That's a whole nother 10 people to know who he is now.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
I'm just old enough to where I remember all of these. I'm not, I didn't.
But would you go
see
the movie?
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. It depends on
who's... another $10-$20 loss there.
It depends on who's in it. It has to be good. If it's good, yeah, I'll go. But it has to be good.
Just the premise doesn't sound good, though.
Yeah.
I'm not really opposed to a Green Lantern movie. It's just that there's a lot to the Green Lantern. I mean, you've got to deal with not only the origin and Abin Sur, but you have to deal with the core, Oa, Sinestro core, the Yellow Lanterns, who would probably be the primary antagonist, although the Green Lantern was kind of in operation before there was a Sinestro. And I don't know, it's just one of those things where it's like, okay, so we have a character with a mythos that goes back so far, it's ridiculous, we have to nutshell that into a movie, and
it's gonna be too much to get into.
Yeah, in that case, the movie suffers. I mean, Batman is pretty iconic, and he's summed up pretty well. Hi, I'm Bruce Wayne, my parents are dead, I'm Batman.
Well, but then again, there has been a lot of comic book movies that have come out in the last, you know, 10, 15 years now. I mean, when you think about it. Well, they are money, but there comes a point where you get exhausted. Yeah, you get exhausted. Really, it's like, yeah, okay, the Hulk again. Great, you know.
Why don't we
watch a movie that has something that I've never ever seen before?
Because that's been happening a lot, and people never respond to it well. For instance, I mean, because you're a good old geek dog. The Shadow.
True.
The Phantom.
I love The Shadow. Now, hold on a minute. I really love The Shadow.
Yeah, you and me and nobody else. See my point? Yeah, The Shadow, The Phantom, Tank Girl, the original Punisher with Dolph Lundgren. Uh-huh. See?
That I won't agree with you on. I mean, but then I don't like The Punisher, so that's, you know, that's just me.
But of all superheroes, why wouldn't they do, like, Wonder Woman first? They haven't done one of them in, what, 20, 30 years?
Because Joss Whedon had it right. When Joss Whedon got the option to write the Wonder Woman film, he was constantly complaining on his blog that it was too hard to write for Wonder Woman, that her rose gallery sucks, and the truth is, it does suck. Wonder Woman is a supporting character. I mean, she's a great role model for girls, and I honestly kind of wish that she were pimped a little bit more versus Barbie and the Huntress. The Bratz, yeah. And there was Birds of Prey, which came out years ago.
Yeah.
Where it was the Huntress and Oracle, Barbara Gordon, and I can't remember who the third one was, and I really don't think anybody cared. I think it might have been the Black Canary. And it just sucked. And it's sad because, you know, Whedon lost that option because he was complaining so much, but he wasn't wrong. There is nothing to be had with Wonder Woman. I mean, she's actually too good a role model where, all right, yes, her outfit is awful, but it's iconic, so they can't change it. Her backstory is pretty deep, but beyond that, it's pretty... It just gets worse as time goes on, where she only seems to thrive in, like, JLA comics.
But in name alone, it would have been better than Green Lantern.
Yeah, because she's one of the top three. And since Superman... Returns, not Superman Reborn, because Superman Reborn would have been a better film, but Singer wanted to dovetail off the Donner universe as opposed to, you know, working hard. So yeah, it's just a kind of a sad thing where it's like, yeah, DC has this great line of titles. They have the Vertigo series, which always does well between V for Vendetta and Constantine and Watchmen, but they just don't really know where to put all their eggs in. And they're most certainly not putting them in all in one basket, but they're just, there's too many baskets where they're just kind of trying to crack an egg and then take half of the yolk and stick it here and then take the shell and stick it here and just kind of see what people carry away.
Yeah. That's really interesting because I never really thought of Wonder Woman as a supporting character. And the more I think about it, it's like, yeah, her strongest stuff was in Justice League stuff.
It really was. I mean, when she killed Max Lord, that sparked a lot of debate because, I mean, it's like, should Wonder Woman have killed him? Like, look, Max Lord was wielding Superman like a big baseball bat, and apparently knocking him out wasn't enough because he still maintained control over Superman even if he was unconscious, so the only thing to do was kill him. And that debate was great. Like should she really do that? Well, she's an Amazon. She's from a warrior race. So... in her brain, if the only way to stop Superman, the most powerful being on the face of the earth, was to kill one normal guy, well, that's the life of one asshole who controls Superman versus the lives of everybody on the face of the earth. Moseying right along, we're actually going to return to a debate that we had last week, which is, I'm about to say Superman, Microsoft's response to the failure rate survey. Microsoft stands behind the Xbox 360 as a superior entertainment console with one of the best warranties in the industry, which is true. We are constantly improving the design, manufacture, and performance of the console through extensive testing and potential sources of any problem. Xbox 360 is pleased to maintain the title of most played console, and the vast majority of 360 customers have enjoyed a terrific gaming and entertainment experience since their first day and continue to day in and day out. And this is response to a survey that was conducted by Game Informer, in which I guess they just kind of sat in a GameStop for a month and decided to find out. A lot of people kind of have been saying, it's like, oh, I wonder how Microsoft's going to respond. They're going to backpedal, aren't they? And they didn't. I mean, this is a pretty genuine response where they say, like, all right, so you have some solid numbers. You conducted an appropriate survey and you caught us. Except we never made any secret about it, except for that one guy that we fired. Because they did. They totally fired a guy who, like, provided a quote for some book about gaming and the industry and the hardware, and he released the actual internal numbers, and they just said, you are f***ing fired.
You were so fired.
I think it was on that game, that Game Informer sort too, that it said, like, the margin was, like, by the way, we didn't actually count how many people rebought a system after their initial one broke, or red ringed, or AV hardware failure, what have you. So they don't know how well Microsoft's 360 is actually selling, because if one person buys four systems, that's still going to look like four people bought systems.
Well, and they continue to buy them too. That's the interesting thing is, it's almost like, heads up, these things are going to have a red ring of death. And like, oh, well, that sucks. Okay, I'll still buy it anyway.
That's what I looked at before I bought my 360. I was like, okay, am I prepared to spend another $200 in 1 to 2 years? Yes, because it's fun. Screaming at people I know over Xbox Live whenever I'm playing anything, had to be Resident Evil, Marvel 1, whatever else I play online.
And it is. It is a fun system. I'm on my second 360, but not because my first one broke. I just put it to greener pastures because I got a new HDTV. And I just kind of wanted a system that ran cooler considering where I was keeping it, which is in my not open entertainment center, because I don't want to spend $150 on a f***ing table. I've been really actually following very closely how it is that Microsoft responds to these allegations since the time that the system launched. I mean, I worked the system launch when I worked at a GameStop. And it was funny because the first thing that they said was every 3 out of 5 systems was subject to failure from launch. And that number didn't change. And the number one thing that they said when they said that was, that's normal. And it's not. They tried to make it seem like it was normal, but it totally wasn't. A Genesis never failed that much. A PlayStation never failed that much. The PS2 Slim didn't fail that much. But they were just trying, and they always came under so much fire, and Steve would say that they get a mulligan for this really big system failure and how widespread the commentary is on it. But I don't really think it's a mulligan. I think that it's they prove that the system itself is good enough to, yeah, it broke. I'll buy another one, or they'll replace it.
Right. It's not even that. It's like people don't realize that when they're seeing these failure rates, a lot of people aren't realizing that 360s are essentially computers. PS3s are essentially computers. If you keep it standing up on your carpet, it's probably going to overheat. If you keep your laptop, you know, in a terry cloth coffin, it's going to overheat. And that's what causes the red ring.
Yeah, but technology is perpetuated by magic. Didn't you know that?
Oh, yeah. I forgot the 360 gnomes.
Seriously, you know, like I turn on my 360, it's not, you know, wattages and voltages and a processor and a hard drive. It's seriously little dwarves with hammers, and I press the on button and it pokes one in the ass, and then he runs over to the other ones and they go, turn the system on, do it now, oga boga. Yeah, but no one really wants to think about it like that. Like, genuinely, no one. Everybody wants to say, like, oh, well, how can you sell a system that fails so much, and how dare you try and get more money out of us? And I just say, like, look, computer, smallest box you can, drill some holes in it, one fan, and then stick it in an entertainment center and hope that it doesn't break. Watch what happens. So, not really a big deal to me.
So now, has this been a thing with the 360? That, you know, they showed that they have a pretty nasty failure rate. Have they shown that, hey, if you leave it out and do this, then it runs just fine? Or is it that it still happens?
360s, when you buy your 360 and you open it up and it's nice little fresh plastic smelling box and you look at it, dead set on your white and or silver disc tray is a sticker. And says, do not move your 360 while there's a disc on it or in it and it's turned on. And people do, regardless of there being a sticker right on the friggin' front.
Right.
That says,
don't read.
People can't read.
So the question is with that, now, you know, as a person who does tech, why don't they put in one that doesn't shatter the DVD when you put it in if you move it?
Well, it's not a matter that it shatters it.
It's
that,
just skip protection.
Yeah, so...
It's okay. Like 90 CD players.
Okay.
It's just really interesting. I mean, they've tried just about everything to try and lower certain things in terms of, like, load times. Because now you can actually cache part of the game onto the hard drive. You can save some of the game to the hard drive, which decreases how much the system actually has to use the disk, which is cute. But it doesn't really, there's no actual other benefit other than that. It cuts down load times by all of 10 seconds. Big deal.
Hey, it works with Fable.
It works for Fable. In terms of the hardware, I mean, they can't really go through this drastic hardware change. I mean, they're constantly making the shell for the 360. They can't make it any bigger, any smaller, not without breaking the thing, I guess, or at least breaking the way that they make it. And they've they've gone about making the new Jasper 360, which has a smaller processor, an extremely smaller processor. It's about the size of a 50-cent piece, as opposed to the original processor, which looked like any other processor that you see in any other machine. And that helps it to run cooler. However, Microsoft also has these very strange policies and procedures where there are a ton of third-party accessory creators who have tried to make solutions that make the 360 run cooler, or at least suck heat out of the thing, because it really isn't well ventilated, not like the PS3, where Nyko and Pelican both, they made, Nyko made the intercooler, Pelican made the Airflow 360. Using that actually makes your warranty subject to being voided.
Never tell Microsoft.
Strange thing. The thing is, though, that it was a solution, and it worked. It really worked. I've always run a system with either an intercooler or an Airflow. And I mean, these things work out, and on top of that, the warranty is the best in the industry, because they pay for the shipping to bring it to them. They don't charge you for the repair if you're within warranty, and if you have a certain failure rate within a certain amount of time, like if you're a month out of your warranty and your system breaks, they would renew your warranty for free. And even then, if it's not within that time span, a new warranty for a 360 costs $100, which is better than spending $300 on the system or $200 on the system to replace the system. You still get your system, they still send you the cardboard coffin for free, and everything works out. So I don't really see a problem, but All the PS3 people do. It's because they're maniacs.
It is.
Yes. They're so passionate.
But yeah, so that's our last fun little tidbit for the night. Brett, any closing comments?
Let's see. Yeah, there's some beeps, and when the beeps stop, you start talking. So
that's right.
Yeah, that's my keep your stick on the ice. I don't know. That's all I got. Sorry.
Don't stick forks in electrical outlets. Don't run with scissors.
Yes. If you keep doing that, you'll go blind. Yes. Okay.
Thanks, GI Brett. Now we know.
knowing is half the battle. Yeah.
All right. Well, that is it for episode 119, which I did not previously mention, of the Big Bald Broadcast. So until next time, I am Mark Swint.
I'm Jack.
I was Brett.
See ya.
Check out www.thebigballbroadcast.com, the central hub for all the geeky news that you can use. There you'll find links to our Facebook, Twitter, MySpace, and blog pages. Catch up on all our past episodes at blog.thebigballbroadcast.com. Send your MP3 comments and emails to mail@thebigballbroadcast.com. You can also subscribe for free via iTunes to have new episodes downloaded automatically. Donations graciously accepted and appreciated. Transmission complete.